Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good. It's Benghazi again. That might be a pattern this week, folks, so just stay tuned for that. And it's good because the truth is coming out. The truth that's coming out is going to be pretty disturbing on a lot of different levels. But we need to know this stuff, especially since American lives were lost and the narrative from this administration has been proven palpably false. And I think we're going to find out just how much later this week and possibly even in subsequent hearings. But right after we recorded yesterday, there was an incredible piece from Cheryl Atkinson of CBS News, who's been doing yeoman's work on this. Basically, what she laid out in that story is that the administration's case and their argument that there was never an order for American forces anywhere at any time to stand down, to go in and rescue the folks in Benghazi who are under assault from the terrorists there, that was just fiction. That had never happened, and that no one in the administration ever given that order. Atkinson lays out very clear that there were folks ready to go. They were told not to board a plane, and so they didn't get on the plane. The plane took off without them, and then at that point they had no chance to come in and rescue them later. So the idea that this is just all some sort of political conspiracy on the part of the president's enemies is being shredded moment by moment here, Jim.
From the very first moments, the first reports of Benghazi, a couple things have just kind of not made sense and just not fit with what your common sense or gut reaction would be. One being that, boy, oh boy, these guys sure as heck didn't have much security around them in a dangerous part of the world. The second one was that, for better or worse, Benghazi is basically it's right on the coast, on the southern end of the Mediterranean. The idea that the U.S. military had no ability to put any forces in for a rescue mission for the better part of a day seems very tough to believe. And, you know, you look at all the number of U.S. Bases we have around the Mediterranean, NATO bases, et cetera. The notion that we had cut our defense so far to the ground that we can't rescue people who are under attack is very disturbing. Then the next thing is the idea of the explanations that, you know, from day one, people are thinking, oh, my goodness, this is a terror attack. And then it was a big protest about a YouTube video. Well, if all those things about Benghazi didn't make sense to you, Gregory Hicks, who is the former deputy chief of mission for the U.S. in Libya, basically number two, Stevens is, you know, right-hand man. He was in Tripoli when all of this was going down. Basically, it sounds like tomorrow he's going to basically say all of our gut instincts were correct, that he couldn't understand why the security had been cut to the bone. If I could use the phrase, our security capabilities stripped to the bare minimum, which is a pretty damning set of words. He says that there's a Lieutenant Colonel Gibson who was ordered to not get on a C-130 that was being set up by the Libyan military from Tripoli to Benghazi that would have at least put some U.S. Special Forces guys on the ground to help get our guys out. Even if it couldn't necessarily have rescued Stevens, it could have at least rescued or mitigated the circumstances of the other three Americans and the artillery that was fired. I mean, remember, this was an attack that went on for hours and hours. So there was time to, you know, to do this. The entire explanation from the folks in the administration is, well, we knew we couldn't get there in time, so we didn't do anything. How do you know how much time you have? You know, you don't know that this attack is going to go on for X number of hours and then stop. So that's a part of the story that's never quite made much sense or been easy to explain. And then the third thing is that basically he says the talking points were absolute nonsense. And I think one of the ways he puts it is that I never reported a demonstration. I reported an attack on the consulate. Chris's last report, if you want to say his final report, is, Greg, we are under attack. No thing of, oh, this protest has gotten out of hand or something like that. So we will see what tomorrow's hearings hold. But it basically says that everything that didn't add up to, in our minds about the Benghazi attack, we had that reaction for a reason, and that his account suggests that the administration responded to this about as badly as possibly could and then told us a pack of lies. And hopefully the truth will come out and there will be accountability for this administration.
A lot of courage is displayed here by Mr. Hicks, as well as the counterterrorism officer who will testify on Wednesday. As many members of this committee have explained, there was a lot of pressure from the State Department for them not to do so. And I think perhaps the most important piece of advice for the Republicans especially, but all members of the House Oversight Committee, came from Jim's Morning Jolt today. Don't grandstand. Don't take up 4.5 of your 5 minutes with explaining how upset you are with the way the administration has handled this. Just ask questions and get as much information out there as possible. And that's the way we're really going to get to the bottom of this and not give an excuse for the liberals to say it's just a partisan witch hunt. I thought that was an extremely important point that was made by you, and I hope they listened to you.
Me too.
I figured you did too. On to martini number two.
I'm always a big fan of my own advice.
On to martini number two now, and this back to America's fiscal health. And this is no big surprise, but it's still not great news from the U.S. Senate. By a vote of 70 to 24 on Monday, the U.S. Senate voted for legislation that would essentially force us to pay a sales tax on internet purchases. This would overturn a 1992 Supreme Court ruling that said a retailer cannot collect sales taxes unless that retailer has a physical presence in the state. So the contention by supporters of this, Jim, is that these taxes are still being paid by the retailers themselves if the customers don't pay them. So it's really not a tax increase, but if we're not paying them for online purchases right now, and then we would have to, yes, it is a tax increase. So it looks like the House is going to be a much tougher sell here, which is a good thing. But once again, the Democrats and way too many Republicans in the Senate are okay with dipping their fingers into our wallets.
Yeah, I mean, I marvel at anyone who looks at the current state of the American economy, the current rate of job creation, the current rate, you know, status of U.S. small businesses, and who says, you know, we really could use a tax on internet purchases. That's what really this country needs. My attitude has always been that there's a trade-off for bricks and mortar businesses and online businesses. Most people buy a combination of both. I remember one day hearing about somebody who wanted to sell jewelry over the internet. And a lot of people will not buy jewelry over the internet because, you know, if you're buying an engagement ring or some special gift for your wife or girlfriend or something, you want to see that. This is something you need to be tangible. You need to touch it. You know, online retailers, you know, a lot of shopping and a lot of particularly your high ticket items, this is a tactile experience. You need to see it in your hand. Now, obviously, look, you know, Amazon's had some great success in those things. You know, a book, when you order a book, you know what a book is going to look like. Same deal for certain toys and certain other products. My idea has always been, there's always kind of been this advantages and disadvantages to both types of retailers. And the idea that, you know, somehow online retailers have some sort of unfair advantage and we need the government to step in to really, you know, crack down hard on them. Fairly ridiculous, fairly annoying. And as you said, just very dispiriting to see so many Republican senators going along with this. I really dread to think, well, you know, you think our economy is kind of hobbling along right now, other than the Dow, of course. You're kind of looking at this and think, boy, I can't wait till the internet sales tax kicks in on top of the payroll tax hike we started this year. 2013 is off to a brutal year in terms of federal taxes, it seems.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. It's not as ugly as 1913 with the whole Federal Reserve and federal income tax coming in, but still pretty ugly. Right now, we don't see a lot of the end in sight, especially with all the Obamacare stuff getting ready to kick in. So on to martini number three now. And Jim, Ted Cruz is apparently getting under the skin of a lot of different Democrats. Yesterday, we talked about how Bill Richardson on This Week declared him not really a Hispanic because he's from Texas. He's a conservative. He's against the immigration bill, so we can't really call him a Hispanic. Richardson has now clarified that, saying he shouldn't identify himself as a Hispanic. I don't identify myself as a Hispanic. I'm an American, yada, yada, yada. Very poor attempt to cover his tracks on that. Now, Ted Cruz is not excited about the House and Senate budget bills going to a conference because he's worried that somehow in there's going to be a deal on the debt ceiling, and he wants that debate to play out separately. So he reserved the right to object to the conference report on the budgets, and Harry Reid fought back with this.
My friend from Texas is like the schoolyard bully. He pushes everybody around and is losing, and instead of playing the game according to the rules, he not only takes the ball home with him, but changes the rules. That way, no one wins. Except the bully tries to indicate to people he has one. We're asking the Republicans to play by the rules and let us go to conference.
Jim, I thought the right to object to something was in the rules, but I could be wrong there.
If it was not within the rules, he wouldn't have been able to do it. Basically, what it is, you know, Harry, look, I'm very used to getting my way. Don't you understand that? I'm Senate Majority Leader. And even though technically you're allowed to object to appointments of members to a joint House Senate Budget Committee, it doesn't mean, you know, look, if you do that, I'm going to call you a bully. He's the bully, not the guy who's saying he's not really Hispanic. A lot of how we get, you know, being told that, you know, somehow Ted Cruz is, you know, not in keeping with, you know, Senate decorum or something like that. After, you know, John McCain calls him a wacko bird. The idea that, you know, Harry Reid, who says that, you know, the tourist smell and stuff like that, really shouldn't be lecturing anybody else about, you know, good graces and charm and respect for his colleagues and stuff. And you look at everything he says. The only thing that Ted Cruz does is that he doesn't, you know, go through all of the traditional, oh, the distinguished gentle lady from California, you know. he is not a guy who has much patience for the old-fashioned, you know, formality of the Senate, and I don't think that that's really the worst sin in you can have for Ted Cruz. National Review put it, you know, somewhat in the latest magazine, we summarize it in just two sentences. The critics of Ted Cruz knock him by saying, Ted Cruz isn't like all the other senators. That's like a slogan. Ted Cruz isn't like all the other senators. Have they taken a look at the congressional approval rating lately? So, this is a different kind of guy, a different style. And the idea that, you know, this is some sort of, you know, schoolyard bully. You know, Harry Reid, who bottles up all legislation that he doesn't like, really shouldn't be running around calling other people schoolyard bullies.
If you're getting that kind of attention, it means you're doing something right, as far as I'm concerned. So, Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.